across the UK, across continental North America, where I am now, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Well, right now, I'm speaking to you in a Boston hotel room, and in a couple of hours, I'm going to be heading to the airport and then ultimately flying back to the United Kingdom. And they're telling me that flights may be a little faster today because of jet stream activity that is giving planes going, I think, from United States to United Kingdom a little bit of a boost from behind, maybe up to an hour, they're saying on radio here, and also having the opposite effects for planes coming to the United States. So, I'm speaking to you at the beginning of this podcast to tell you about what's going to be in it. And what's going to be in it is a summation of a lot of the stuff that we did on the Unexplained Live Cruise 2023 with Mirella and the Discovery up the eastern seaboard of the United States and into Canada. What a fascinating experience, not only geographically in the places that we saw. I didn't get to get off the ship much and see places. I could see them from the ship, but I was aware of them. And certainly very warm in Florida, very nice in Portland, Maine. Everybody was surprised at how sunny and warm it was there. The locals were really pleased that at this time of year it was so good when we were there. Then we sailed up towards Halifax, Nova Scotia, through various places, including St. John, New Brunswick. Very friendly Canadian atmosphere. America, of course, bustling, and still the same great United States that I always remembered. And for many reasons, I haven't been to the U.S. as much as I love it in 15 years. So to return has been slightly emotional for me because it's a reminder of the person who I was. And, you know, in many ways, I don't know, I gave up on some things, including long-haul travel some years ago. And I missed them. So I'm glad that I've been able to do that. Among the people you'll hear on this edition of The Unexplained are some of the listeners to the show and some of the people who are on the cruise and their unique personal experiences. Also talking to Malcolm Robinson and Dr. David Whitehouse and Andrea Perrin and Jacqueline Nunez from The Conjuring House, who gave a special presentation on my last day, November the 2nd. So you'll hear from them. And I'm just going to run these things as blocks of sound, one after the other. And they're in chronological order. So the last thing that you will hear will be the material from Andrea Perrin and Jacqueline Nunez about The Conjuring and what's happening at The Conjuring House now. So hope you're going to enjoy this edition as I speak to you from Boston. By the time I've nailed this edition together and by the time you hear it, you're going to be into next week. And probably you'll have heard the Sunday radio show by the time I do the edits and put it all together. But like I say, it is blocks of sound and a reflection of the week, well, the 11 days or so that I spent on board the Mirella Discovery going up the eastern seaboard of the United States and into Canada. A unique experience for them and a unique experience for me. So here it comes. On board the Mirella Discovery, and this morning speaking to you from a wonderful place I've actually been to once before in my life, called Portland in Maine. Now, if I sound a little bit Barry White at the moment, I've had a little bit of a cold. It's taken a few days to recover from, but it's made me sound very deep like this. You know, I think, you know, that happens when you fly long haul, I think. So let me tell you about the trip so far, then. We started in Florida. Florida, we drove through to get to the ship, and it's incredibly flat and very sunny and warm and incredibly clean looking, and everything is big. You know, the roadside Starbucks are huge, so that hits you. Then you board the plane, or rather board the ship, and once you get yourself comfortable, which, you know, they make it easy to do here, you then explore the ship, and then you're at sea for 2 days. So that was the way that we did that, 2 days at sea. And I like the experience of being at sea. Now, I was busy all the way through this, presentations to give every single day with our guest speakers and one from myself. I did mine yesterday. But our guest speakers, David Whitehouse, who gave a fantastic presentation about Apollo. He's got two more presentations to come as I record this. Malcolm Robinson talking about some of the stuff he's talked about on podcasts that you've heard with him, including recently, about the great UFO cases of Scotland, including the A70 case and the Deckmont case. In fact, he's got the trousers of the man involved in one of those cases that were lacerated apparently by something not of earthly origin. There are some great UFO cases in Scotland. Malcolm Robinson, he's got books about this, check them out. Definitely knows all about them, so he was great. And who else? We had Liz Cormell. Liz Cormell speaking today with her first session, but we've already introduced her in an introductory session with everyone. She's going to be talking about great ghost cases that she's covered. And we've also got David Rolfe, the man who made the two films about the Shroud of Turin. He's got a replica of the Shroud with him. The great thing about it is so far is that all the sessions, including the one about me, were absolutely packed out. More even so than last year, that was well attended. This year's really surprised me, because there are people on this cruise who didn't book for the unexplained cruise, they just booked for a cruise. And they've been surprised to find that we're doing this. And, you know, they've been attending, they've been coming along and responding well. So I might try to grab a word with some of them if I can. I don't want to intrude on their cruise, but that's part of the plan with that. So that's where we are. I hope everything is okay with you. Remember, the website is theunexplained.tv. The Facebook page is the official Facebook page of The Unexplained with Howard Hughes. And I'm looking out over Portland, Maine right now. It's about 8 o'clock in the morning. American skies, and I've said this before, I think are better than British skies. The blue is bluer, and there's more of it, and there's more sunshine. Portland itself looks incredibly clean and very, very ordered and layered. The city seems to, it's not a big city, having been here before, but it goes in tiers, and some of the buildings almost look Dutch in their origin. A little bit of Dutch and a little bit of New England style, maybe a little bit of French built in there, but it's very classy. You know, if you docked and they told you that you docked in a port in France, then you might believe it. Looks very nice. Got to explore it. We'll talk about, you know, what I see. I don't have a lot of time, if I can get off the ship, to see the places, so I can just sort of get off and walk a bit round the quayside and, you know, come back and report. But it looks interesting. Very quiet start to today. So that's the reason that I haven't reported into you before now. We're a few days into the cruise. I was a bit under the weather at the beginning, but everything's going swimmingly well. Food on board, marvellous. Bed in my cabin where I'm speaking at the moment is a gift, really. You know, when you go away, the most important thing, isn't it, is the bed. The bed's no good. You've got a problem. I'm here to tell you that the bed is perfect, is a million times better than the rickety, slanting thing that I've got at home. So that's a gift. And I've got my little balcony here. And it's, you know, it's all nice. It's all beautifully clean and all the things that you look for and all the things my mum used to look for in a cruise. So that's it. First report. Next report coming soon here on The Unexplained with Howard Hughes. The Unexplained Live 2023. The Unexplained on location. We are in a basement, a beautiful one, in Portland, Maine. A place called Buzz Coffee, which is a fab independent coffee shop. If you're ever in Portland, gotta come here. Not only do they do the best coffee, they also do some very nice things to eat, and they also do some terrific t-shirts, one of which I succumbed to. And the person who just served me is?
My name's Alex.
Alex. And Alex, you're not originally from Portland, right?
No, I'm from Rhode Island.
Right, and we got talking about ghosts. Mm-hmm. And you said that when you were in Rhode Island,
yep,
you'd actually experienced one when you were a kid.
When I was a kid.
So what happened? I want to get a real American ghost story, if that's all right.
Well, I mean, it's really short. So.
Oh, well, that's good. We like that.
Yeah. So my parents live in a really old home. It was built in the 1920s. And before they put an extension on it, it was all original. And there was one night, I think I was like 5 or 6 years old. I just woke up and it's going to sound really weird, but like there was a little girl in my room.
Yeah,
I wasn't afraid or anything, but she was there. I just looked at her. She looked at me, and then I got a little spooked, so I like went under my blankets, and then I fell back asleep, and she was gone. And then the next morning, I told my dad about it, and he was like, oh, he didn't really know how to respond. But yeah, that's my one ghost experience. I never saw her again, never experienced her again, but...
Maybe she'd lived there.
Maybe
she was keeping an eye on you.
Yeah.
Who knows?
But
I like the short story. Sorry, you do?
I do have to say, like, it wasn't a scary experience. It was definitely more of, like, a comforting, like, safe one. Like, it spooked me, but I wasn't terrified, if that makes sense. It was just more weird, but I was like, okay.
And what did she, you know, if you said little girl.
Yeah.
Can you remember, you know, what was her face like? Was she aware of you?
Yeah, she was looking at me. She had blonde hair, but that's really, I mean, she was wearing, like, a nightgown. But yeah, that's my one.
Like an imprint of somebody who'd lived there before. I mean, if you'd researched it, maybe later, you were too young to do that, but maybe. You might have found out it was somebody who'd lived there.
Yeah.
A little girl coming to play. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like a little girl coming to play.
Maybe.
With a little girl living there now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's definitely a possibility. It wasn't spooky. I've never been spooked in my parents' house ever. But yeah, it was definitely just kind of like a thing. Actually, now that I think about it, something else happened in my house. This is what happens. So it was, I wasn't there for this, but my dad is not a believer in ghosts, doesn't believe in afterlife. I mean, I'm sure he does, but he doesn't want to admit it. And so in 2019, actually, a little backstory, so this makes sense. So my grandma, she's from Iran, and when she was born, she was given this grandfather clock. And so in my lifetime, it has never worked, ever. And so when my dad went back to Iran, he took it so we could hang it up in our house. And she had passed away, and never, ever, ever has this grandfather clock made any noise, ever. She had passed away, and I want to say like a week or two later, my mom, my sister, and my dad are all in the house, and then they start hearing this like dinging noise or something, and they're like, what is that? And they go in the living room, and it was the clock, and it only worked for a few minutes, and everyone was like, this is impossible. There's no way that this is happening.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So she must
have
been passing.
That's a sign.
Yeah.
And you always get this with people saying, well, I don't know, I've got maybe got a little story, but it's not very good. And then you had two good ones.
Yeah.
Alex, thank you very much indeed. Just to remind you listening that this is the best coffee shop in Portland. It is Buzz Coffee. I've just bought one of the fab T-shirts, which I'll try and wear in a photograph that I'll put on my social media and stuff. And we're going to enjoy our coffee now. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And as you say in America, have a nice day.
Yeah, have a great day. Uh-huh. Have a nice day.
Thank you. sitting in a street cafe in the sunshine in Portland, Maine, USA. And I've got to say, if I sound even more relaxed, you know, in spite of the cold than I did before, it's just because I've been on shore now for the first time in America, and my first time in America for the thick end of a couple of decades. And back in Portland, I was here last in 2005, 2006. It's changed massively, but it's still fabulous. Loads of independent shops. Friendly, laid-back people, and the vibe gets to you. I've only been, you know, walking around here for a couple of hours, and it, you know, it just affects you. With me, I promised my good friend Chris, who runs Manx Radio on the Isle of Man, that I would talk to some real listeners of The Unexplained. So, Chris, I hope you're listening to this, because this is partly for you. Sitting at this pavement cafe, beautiful, clear blue American sky, there's a guy and a woman on a motorbike who've just gone past, the biggest motorbike you've seen in your life ever, and he's playing soft rock. And they just sail past with great big motorbike handlebars, American style. Looks like some kind of movie. You know, I thought it was Arnold Schwarzenegger on there. And they just both wave and smile. You know, this is the America that I love. And it's so, and for my American listeners, it's kind of nice to be home. It's great. Anyway, with me is Susie from Scotland, who's a fan of The Unexplained and actually booked for the Unexplained Live cruise, which I'm thrilled about. How's it going so far, Susie?
Incredible, actually. I've never been on a cruise before, and it's just full on, and the wonderful, strange, unexplained stories, and speaking to lots of people that have got their own unexplained stories, so I'm having a ball.
I'm delighted. And of the stuff that we're doing and that we've done, what floats your boat, literally?
I don't know. It's just venturing out into the unknown a little bit, and seeing where the universe is going to take you next, and who you're going to meet next, and that's what I enjoy.
You're a little bit of a quester on life's journey, aren't you, Susie? As you've been telling me when we were walking around and just getting to know this place, you're somebody who asks questions. What's the stuff that really interests you?
The truth of our history on the planet. Who am I? What am I? What are we doing here? and what have we been told that is true and what isn't true.
Do you think there's a lot of hogwash out there?
Absolutely.
And have you had, like a lot of people I talk to, I mean, the people who haven't specifically booked for the unexplained, we've got loads of those packing out every session. And there are people like you who have booked for the unexplained particularly. You know, it's a mix of people. Sometimes I'll talk to somebody and I'll say, have you got your own story of whatever? Have you experienced anything? And they'll say, well, no, I don't think so. And then they'll say, well, hang on. No, there was that time when so-and-so. It was like Alex in the coffee shop down below. We've come outside from then out of the open-air tables. But, you know, she had not one story, but two stories. Anything happened to you?
Well, I've got one. It might be tricky to explain, but I'll try. I was working late as a designer in an old building that was renowned for ghost stories, but that didn't bother me. I had my music on very loud. It was 8 o'clock at night. The cleaner who was cleaning up the offices came through and said, oh, the rats are making a terrible noise on the back stair. And I'm fascinated by animals as well. So I said, oh, show me. So we went through to the back stair of this old building. And if you can understand, when you have a staircase that you can actually walk underneath, so it's quite shallow. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And I could hear all the scratching of the rats inside the staircase.
Sound effects as well.
And so for whatever reason, I went up and I went 3 times on the stair. I don't know why. But then I heard back. And I thought, a person can't fit in that tiny space. Rats can't count. What is going on? I looked at the cleaner, she looked at me, and we just thought, this doesn't make any sense in our universe. And we couldn't even speak about it. We just went our separate ways. And I thought, I don't know what that was at all.
So something had maybe been there, maybe when, you know, the building was previously used for something else, and whatever it was present, and this is all speculation, like a lot of these things are, was somehow replying to you, wanted you to know that it was there.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that?
It was just odd the way we couldn't speak about it. We just didn't want to admit that that's happened in our reality. So we just went, better go. And we went in our separate directions because I just couldn't fathom it. Nobody could get in a space that size to knock.
And because you're interested in all these things, interested enough to be here, I don't know whether you find, as I find, most people have a story. And if you push them slightly in the nicest possible way, they'll tell you. Mm-hmm.
Indeed. And I've found a few people on the ship that haven't come for the unexplained tour, but they have their own story. And you might want to ask them for their story.
Well, I'm going to be trying to, in amongst everything else I am. But isn't it nice sitting here in the sunshine? Now, it's October. We're nearer to November than we are October. What's the date today? Is it 27th? 27th of October, as we record these words. And Portland's incredibly clean, okay? We're in one of the back streets here. There are loads of independent shops selling all kinds of clothes and all kinds of things. It's just like, you know, parts of the UK used to be. And the sun is beating down from a clear blue sky. I don't know what you think, Susie, but I think it's just beautiful.
Yeah, magical. It's lovely. Absolutely lovely.
Well, I know that you're going to go and have a little wander, and I've got to get back to the ship because I've got a Liz Cormel presentation to do a little bit later. Just to say to you, if you're listening to this, I know that you will be saying to me, why can't you include the presentations on the podcast? And I can't include the presentations on the podcast because they belong to the individual people. And, of course, some of that material they will be presenting elsewhere, so I'm not allowed to do that, but I will try and summarize it for you and give you a flavor of what this is like. But it's nice to be finally, after all these years of talking about things that I have done in the past in America, it's finally amazing to be back here. And you know, I'll report back with another segment of this podcast very, very soon. Stay here. The Unexplained Live 2023, we're on board the MV Discovery. Liz Cormel, a popular guest on the show, has just done a session here. And I was approached after it. It was a session about ghosts all over the country, some of which you will have heard about on the show anyway. I was approached by two people, Chris from Chester and Margaret from Durham originally, right? And both of them have got stories. stories that they want to tell you now of a sort of ghostly nature. So let's start with Chris, because I think yours involves, like a lot of these stories, a hospital. Is that right?
Yes, it is. It was in Chester, the city hospital, and it was closed down in the beginning of the 90s. So I was in the ambulance service and we were moving the last of the patients out. But I wanted to visit a ward, Ward 19, that I was born in, but I nearly died in as a teenager. And I thought, I'll go and have a look, nice sunny day, and trotted in and had a look around. I thought, God, he saved my life, this place. So felt a bit cold, even though it was summer, and I thought, something not quite right. Came out, that was it. But there was a big chain hanging off the door. It's like those double handles, and I thought no more of it. But after the hospital shut, one of the doctors, the consultant secretary, had written a book about the hauntings of this hospital, and there's a lot of it. It used to be a workhouse in the Victorian times, I suppose, and it was in the logbook, the porter's logbook, repeatedly, that this particular ward, it had a heavy-duty chain with a padlock, a good-sized padlock on it, and it was repeatedly coming undone by itself. Nobody was there, and it was only the porters and the security, you know. And I went there when it was undone, because I remember the chain hanging off it, thinking that was a bit odd. I just went on and had a look around, and it was supposed to have been permanently chained up.
So, you look, hospitals are places where, you know, great dramas happen, don't they? Do we think it was something there that was doing that, that was maybe part of the hospital, or maybe part of the workhouse before?
I would think probably part of the hospital, because I think it was that ward. I learnt after reading this little book that in one of the side wards there used to be a girl that used to cry, and the nurses used to go in and nobody there. And they came in to me once because I had meningitis and I was really, really ill and nearly died. And they came flying in and woke me up. Are you all right? Yeah? Ah, okay. So whether that was that particular room, side room, I don't know.
Were you ever scared there?
No. I was brought up in a haunted house, and it wasn't until I left home.
Now you tell me the best bit. What was your house like when you were brought up?
It's only a bungalow in a village outside of Chester, an L-shaped bungalow. But it goes back, I think it was originally built in the early 20s. So it had Art Deco, and then it was altered, so it looks fairly modern now. But three people had died in there that I know. One committed suicide, and it was my mother that found her as a 12-year-old. Yeah, nasty. And it was her, I think, that's tried to get hold of us, because my mum said she was hanging washing out in the line. We only had one neighbour, and somebody was shouting her by her name repeatedly. Nobody around. And I do oil paints. So I was in the hall painting, and my sister was humming at me, and you know how it fades in and out? It's like that. And I said, Jacqueline? No, nothing. Stop. Start again. Jacqueline went on about three times, and I thought, right, she's hiding behind the door and she's tormenting me. Nobody there. So I go through to where my grandfather was in the other room watching TV, and I said, where's Jacqueline, who's my sister? And he says, at the caravan with your parents. I thought, oh yeah, I forgot. There's nobody else
so
in the house.
Who was it? You never knew.
Not for sure, but I had an idea. It might have been my mum's aunt who killed herself trying to get attention. Because my granddad said, why? So I explained, and he just went, oh. And then it was some while after, my mum came over, took me over to one side. She was a sceptic, and she brought us up to be sceptics, really. She said,
But the history of the place had perhaps imprinted itself on it, I understand.
Yeah, and her mother died there and wasn't very well and had gone a bit aggressive and things like that. And I think the previous owner to where my grandparents bought it, I think he died there as well. And as kids, both me and my sister, we never felt at ease. We always felt cold. The house was always cold, even on a hot day. And I was more frightened to walk through one end of the house and go outside to the bottom by the fields in a shed and rummage around in the dark with screaming foxes. I was more brave to go and do that. And we talk about it still, saying we never felt comfortable with it at all. And I feel that there was, like, my great aunt, this was in the wartime that she'd hung herself because her husband got killed in a mid-air collision, so she never got over it. The other person, I felt there was an older sort of entity person, and that might have been the original owner from New. Other than that, I don't know.
So when you see these programs on the telly about hauntings and ghosts, you actually think, yeah, there's something in that. You must, because you've been there, you've experienced it.
I think there's unexplainable things. Some can be scientifically sort of fixed out, if you like. But there is, weird stuff happens, it does. I don't care what anybody says, weird stuff happens and you can't fully explain it.
Well, you get no disagreement from me. With you is Margaret. Have you been travelling together, by the way?
Yes, we're on this cruise. We came together, booked it about 3 weeks ago.
So, what, lifelong friends? What's the story?
No, only the last couple of years.
Oh,
yeah.
And you thought, well, we'll do this.
Yeah,
and you've
travel.
Just discovered that, you know, I was doing this here. You didn't know it was happening?
I did. No, I learnt beforehand, before I came on the cruise, that you were going to be here. And I thought, right, I'm going to see
We'll have
this.
A bit of that. Oh, this is all good, because we've been, I've been really delighted that, you know, we've had so many people at the sessions.
Yeah,
that, you know, they've worked, which is good.
It's been a good turnout. Yeah.
Now, Margaret, you were in the RAF, right?
Yes.
Back in the late 60s,
yes.
Turn of the decade.
Yes.
What happened?
Well, I was stationed at what was then Bomb Command Headquarters. It then became Strike Command Headquarters. And we worked underground.
Where was that, by the way?
This was High Wycombe, just outside High Wycombe.
Yeah.
It was top secret. And so nobody knew anything about it other than those that worked there. And then, as I sat down one night, and we had sort of continental shifts, so this was late evening, when I received a call, and it was from a policeman in Slough, asking me, did we have any aircraft over the sky in Slough? So I checked with my squadron leader, and we didn't. And I said, nope, we've got nothing up there at all. And you sort of raise your eyebrows and think, what? Then, within the space of, I guess, 10 minutes, we had Yusuf High Wycombe, United States Air Force High Wycombe, phoning us, did we have anything in the sky over Slough? Nope, we don't have anything in the sky over Slough. And then there was different people rang up, and we said, and I think the policeman said he thought it maybe a Derby and Joan club have had too much sherry.
Huh.
But as it happened, one of the guys that we worked with, he lived in Slough, which wasn't far from where we were. So he said, I'll tell you what, I'll phone my wife. So we all plugged in, and he phoned his wife, and he just said, can you do me a favour, sweetie? Pop out and see what you see in the sky. So we heard a clip-clop over these parquet floors, and the door open, and then the door slammed shut, and we heard her run to the phone. And she says, I don't know what's going on. It looks like a spaceship. It's a round thing over our house. And we sort of looked at each other, and it was just... So we got the squadron leader involved, and we said, there's definitely something over there. And we were coming to the end of the shift. So with that, he said, I'll check out and I'll see what it is. And the next day, the only thing I can really say was, our squadron leader looked completely shifty. When we asked him, did you find out? He says it was probably a measuring craft from Heathrow.
Yeah.
Not possible. It was too late at night. No, it wasn't. And the strangest thing, there was enough people, an American Air Force base, a British Air Force base, the police were involved, all kind of citizens were involved, and yet nothing was in the papers. Something happened.
What do you... I mean, you can talk about it now, I think, probably, because you don't work there
I'm
now.
I'm old enough, I don't care.
Right, good. We like... This is what we like to hear. Do you think that kind of thing happens a lot? And you think that the RAF and those reports are, you know, are reported to, do you think they silence them? Do you think they know what they are?
Cover it up. Now, this is going to sound awful, but I think the Air Force is predominantly, or it was predominantly, run by men.
Yeah.
And men's ego is notoriously large. And if they don't
not
have
all
an
of us.
I'm sorry about that. If they don't have an answer, perhaps that's the answer. They really don't like to admit that they don't have an answer. Now, I'm definitely a sceptic when it comes to ghosts and ghouls and things that go bang in the night. I am scared to death of them, by the way, but that's by the way. But this was an unexplained. That was unexplained. I wouldn't have called it ghostly. If I was to put a title on it, I would say, well, something to do with the little green men in spaceships.
That sounds like a UFO or unidentified aerial phenomena story.
I have another story if you're interested.
Do you? Okay.
And remember, you're talking to a sceptic, so this is actual fact, first hand. A friend and I, Brenda, who's since died, and I was just out for a walk, and again, it was probably mid-60s. And she just said, should we pop round our Denny's? Denny being her brother. I says, oh, go on then. So we pop round Denny's. And Denny was there with his wife, Eleanor. And we sat in the kitchen. And right by my head was a narrow windowsill, high up. The kitchen table was in front of me. And to my right was Brenda. Directly opposite was her brother, Denny. And to his right was his wife, Eleanor. And then somebody decided it was a good idea to do this Ouija thing, and I find it very entertaining. So out it came, and I'm one of these that I won't put my finger on it. I'll make it look as though it's on, because I'm wanting to find out who it is that's pushing this glass. So it started off, and it was, is there anybody there? Yes. Oh, okay. Have you got a message for somebody? Yes. And this was Denny talking. And then without any warning, there was a deck of cards on this windowsill. And it virtually flew past my head. So fast, it cleared the table. Right over. Never understood, and I always thought Denny did something, but he didn't know we were going. So that's an unexplained that I've never known an answer to. So go forward. The message is for Brenda, my friend, sitting to my right. Who's the message from? Uncle Pat. Well, I have no clue who Uncle Pat is. And Brenda, she was definitely a believer. But what's the message? And the message was, tell Joe it won't be long before I see him.
Oh.
I had no clue what this meant. But Brenda jumped up screaming, jumped up so fast that the chair got knocked over, and she ran into the front room, followed quickly by Denny and Eleanor, and I'm left there thinking that I'm not staying nearby. So I followed them in, and it turned out that Uncle Pat was John's brother, who was dead. I didn't know who John was, because I'm getting names mixed up. I only ever knew Brenda's father as old Joe. He was a lot older than his wife. And I only ever knew him as old Joe. So when the name John came up,
you didn't make the link.
I had no clue. Mm. So that was Thursday evening. And I can promise you every word I'm telling you, this is first hand. That was Thursday evening. Brenda was terrified. I didn't dare mention it to my mum and dad, because I'd have got a crack. Sunday evening, and it was in the days when, you know, they had cigarette machines on corner ends. My father went out, my dad went out and to get some cigarettes, and he was forever. And he came back and said, well, you were a long time, Dad. He said, I bumped into Brenda. She'd come careering round, racing. And so I stopped and said, what's the matter? Because he thought somebody was chasing her. Brenda's dad had died, and she was running for the priest. So the Thursday, Pat had said it won't be long before I see him. And this was the following Sunday, and he'd actually died. Although I absolutely don't believe in things like that, I was terrified.
Well, you would be.
And I didn't dare tell me that. All I know is I spent all that night under the bedclothes.
And I presume you left the Ouija board alone after that, did you?
No.
You didn't? You did more of it?
Yeah, but nothing exciting. Nothing remotely close to that ever happened. But I was interested in your show tonight, when there was something about electricity. The night my dad died, the electric fire, which we had been using because we had no idea the circulation goes and your feet turn blue. My dad's feet were cold, so we got the electric fire and we were massaging his feet. And he eventually died. The electric fire immediately ceased working. All of a sudden we heard this, like a mini explosion. And it was a light bulb in the bathroom exploded. These are things I can testify to. And then my cousin, who lived 11 and a half miles away, at 2:30 that morning, and she'd long since been retired, 2:30 that morning, her alarm had gone off. She doesn't set alarms, and that had gone off. So I was interested in the electrical thing. Does it have significance?
Yeah, well, they do say that phenomena is affected by electricity, and electricity is affecting phenomena. How that happens, I have no idea. But we mentioned it, just to tell my listener here, in the session with Liz Cormell, where she'd had electrical impacts of things, or caused by things that she'd experienced, of which there were many. So look, you say you're a skeptic.
Yeah.
You can't be 100% skeptic, though, now,
it's
can
like
you?
I said, I don't believe in ghosts, but I'm scared to death of them. Mm. The only other experience I've ever had was with a fiancé, and he was an American, and I decided to take him down to the beach. It was pitch black, but it wasn't terribly late.
Where was this?
This was in County Durham, and there was a beach road that you could go down, but you had to know the area, and then there was a little path, and we were in a car, a little path that you could drive up that took you to a plateau at the end of this little pathway. I was driving, and all I know was that as soon as I got onto that plateau, I was filled with the most terrifying fear and horror that I could barely get the gears to turn the car around and get out. And my then fiancé, couldn't understand what was going on, and I couldn't explain why this terror had suddenly grasped me. And I was practically immobilised. And we got out of there, and as soon as we got off the plateau, it went. I don't know.
You were nervous about doing this before. You were great. And I have never spoken with anybody who's actually been on duty with the RAF when something strange has been reported and actually told me precisely what happened, even though it was those years ago. That's fascinating. Thank you for sharing that with me.
You're welcome.
So Chris and Margaret here on board the MV Discovery, which is turning out for me to be a bit of a gift that keeps on giving, despite the remnants of my cold here, which I'm rapidly chasing away. It's after this day in the United States that we've had, and now we're moving off to Canada. So thank you both very much indeed.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Well, amazingly, it is the Unexplained Live on board the MV Discovery Day 6. And here we are in the Squid and Anchor. Now, I think all of the ships, Morella's ships, have got a Squid and Anchor. It is like the pub come bar come show area with a screen. And a lot of the presentations have been done here. This one's got a couple of hundred seats. Actually, more than that. Very comfortable, very nice. Got the sunshine at the moment pouring in from St. John, Newfoundland. So we're about to do another session with Dr. David Whitehouse. It's going to be, and I'm just stepping into an area that kind of acoustically reverbs, it's going to be another session about space. This one is about the Moon, Mars, and beyond. First one was about Apollo, and the last one is going to be about the search for life beyond ourselves. So I'm going to just approach the podium at the moment here, because David, in just moments from now, it's terribly exciting. I've got to introduce you. So, you know, what have you, I mean, you've had fantastic response so far. We've packed them out, haven't we?
We've had a great time. And there's so many people in this lecture theatre for all the talks, even though this is a ship of distractions. People can go anywhere and do so many things. They've chosen to come and see us.
And if you look at the two of us, it's a ship of fools. But it's a ship of distractions where, as I've said every time we've done something, there are loads of other things to do. There's a multitude of choice of food, and you can go. I've just been to a place called the Glass House. Have you been there? There's a swimming pool.
I've been up to the Glass House and swimming pool, which is actually the cool end of the ship, isn't it?
It's, it's It is.
Because not many people have sussed out where the glass house and that swimming pool is, so it's a nice place to go.
It's a sort of, you know, Michael Caine location, because not many people know that,
right.
You know, as they say. Yeah. But, you know, so it's an amazing ship with all sorts of things. So to think that here we are now, heading towards the early evening, it's going to be 4 o'clock when you kick off with the latest session, and we've got already, you know, people filing in here, and we're going to fill the place again. It's really lovely to think that is the case. Just give me a quick rundown then. We can't do the whole presentation now because there isn't time, and that's not what we do. But just give me a rundown of what you're going to be talking about then.
Well, the first time we talked about Apollo 11, the first footprint on the moon, the first mission to land on the moon, which was great. I mean, we loved doing that. That was everybody thought that was fabulous. But now we're extending it to the return to the moon. When are we going to go back to the moon? Who's going to land on the moon? Where are they going to go? How that fits in with the next mission to Mars? How difficult is it going to be to go to Mars? Could you live on Mars? What are the conditions like? And then at the end, we're going to look at the planets Jupiter and Saturn and the missions coming up to explore Jupiter and Saturn. So we're doing a whole tour of the solar system.
Right, and you asked the question, you know, could you live on Mars? Now, we know that the missions to Mars, people had a very optimistic estimates of when we might get there. Some people saying, you know, a couple of years from now, that's not going to happen. It's going to be the 2030s at least, isn't it? Could we live on Mars, knowing what we know about it, knowing what we know about us?
Well, getting to Mars is a problem because the journey is like none other that humans have ever contemplated, and that's a tough survival to get to Mars. Living on Mars initially, yes, you could, provided you had the support, provided you had a lifeline from Earth to learn how to live on the planet. But ultimately, and we're talking decades away now, of learning on the planet, of learning to use the resources, of being able to make your own oxygen and water, yes, on the planet, which you can theoretically do. You can see a way for a small colony to be self-sufficient, but not for decades. So over our lifetimes, it's a colony on Mars supported from Earth, but our children's lifetimes, perhaps Mars could be a separate, independent planet of its own government.
Well, I mean, that's a very good thought, and we might need something like that to go to, ultimately, perhaps a little more adeptly governed than it is down here. Were you reading? While we've been away, a few things have happened. You know, a lot of space news breaks all the time now about there being some molten material discovered underneath the surface of Mars now. Would that have been unexpected?
Mars is a world of mysteries. There are all sorts of, dare I say, unexplained
things, just this once, though.
Things on Mars. I mean, one of the curiosities is that you can take a picture of a slope on Mars and you can see a gully that's been cut by running water. You go back to the same place and take another picture and you see a new gully has formed. So clearly there are things happening on the surface of Mars. But the problem is we don't really know what's happening just below the surface because our observations are fairly limited. But there does seem to be some evidence that in some parts of Mars it's warmer under the surface, so that this briny water can reach the surface and trickle down. And perhaps even there might be some sort of volcanism left, where the rocks can actually get quite warm. And that would be important because heat on Mars is important. Mars is a small world, not much of an atmosphere, loses its heat. If you've got a source of thermal energy on Mars, then you might want to think about putting your base there because you'd stay warm.
Yeah, and you can generate your own from that.
Yeah.
Now, more importantly, we came up, actually, I might say so to myself, I woke up with the title one day, but we've been trying to work out, because we're both into music, right, aren't we? You play a guitar, I don't play anything except the fool, but I woke up with a name in my head for our band.
Our band.
Our band is going to be, because this is the Morella MV Discovery, we're going to be?
You came up with the title, Morellian.
And you have to have been around maybe in the 80s and 90s to remember Morellian, their famous lead singer Fish. But David and I are currently vying to be
We're the chief songwriters, aren't we? We're going to lay it down for our first album.
We'll be the principal lyricists.
Yeah, we will.
And, you know, I can hit the high notes like no one else. David, I'm going to let you get on with it. You've done so many of these things. You're very calm about it.
Well, actually, you're usually not below the surface because you know each audience is different. Mm. But this is a wonderful audience. I'm really looking forward to talking to these guys.
Because they really care about it. Yeah. All right, I'll let you get on. David Whitehouse, my friend of many years, about to do his presentation here. Now I'm going through that echo. Let's do it's very naughty of me to do this, but a couple of listeners here. This is for my podcast, okay? So this is my intimate audience here. Sorry, what were your names again?
Catherine
and Philip. All right, Catherine and Philip. If I repeat it to myself, I'll say, have you been enjoying what you've seen and heard so far?
Yes, all of it. I've enjoyed all of it. Very good.
And Philip, the best bit, what do you think so far? I mean, we're like halfway through.
I've really enjoyed the story about Apollo.
Yeah,
enjoyed it that much. We actually bought the book.
Yeah, well, that's it, because we just have to say that David Whitehouse's book, you know, is on sale here, but also at all good leading publishers and stuff. But I've been delighted at the numbers here. There was even a session about, and I thought three people and their grandmother would come. There was a session about my life and times and career and how that led to the unexplained. And I was looking at you and everybody else, and you were very polite.
Yes, it was very good. It was really interesting. You probably don't believe, but it's very interesting.
Well, it's funny because, you know, we all think we're quite boring, but it was, I thought, the fact that they're not walking out must mean something.
Yes, no, it wasn't boring at all. It was very interesting.
Oh, well, that's very sweet of you.
And I suppose time-wise, some of those dates for us, we remember a lot of these things that you're talking about and a lot of this as well.
And I don't know whether we've got more ghosts coming up. We've got, hopefully, if it all comes together, Andrea Perrin, who's featured or is depicted in the movie The Conjuring that we'll be showing here. She's going to be joining the ship for just a very short period of a few hours in Boston on November the 2nd before I leave the ship. Are you interested in that?
We'd very much like to do that. Our timing is... we thought it might be tight today if we're going trips.
Right, no, well, it's...
The timing of the...
It's going to be the same.
Good, because they're at 4 p.m.
So we've timed it so that she'll be on board for 4 p.m.
People getting back. For people getting back.
You're being strong and silent. You happy?
No, I was just interested because you titled The Unexplained. I remember in the 80s, there used to be a magazine called The Unexplained. Oh, you probably remember it. Yeah, I thought...
I probably bought it.
So did I. On a weekly basis, I think it used to come out. So is that where you got your title from? Or was it just...
I think so. I mean, look... If I was titling the show again, I wanted a title that would cover loads of different stuff, because I get bored easily, and that's why I do bits of science and space and all sorts of other things. But I'd probably give it, you know, zogaruniex.com as a title, so it was completely unique. I probably next time round wouldn't give it the title The Unexplained. But, you know, now that you know it's there, I hope you check it out.
It does cover it, doesn't it?
Well, the audience is beginning to fill up. I better shut up now, but I just wanted to give you... my listener, an idea of what happens at these sessions. So we're here in the Squid at Anchor, which is a bar, yes, but the bar's a long, long way back there. If I was to shout, it would echo around the place. And loads of comfy seats. I love comfy seats at the moment. Loads of lovely comfy seats, and the masses are beginning to arrive, so I better go. Thank you very much, both. Okay. Right, so we're standing by. Just moments from now, Dr. David Whitehouse will be speaking with us. On the screen, images of his various book covers. Please don't forget to buy them. They're suitable for all occasions. If you're very good, David might even autograph them for you. This is The Unexplained Live 2023. The Unexplained Live 2023. We are on the ship, and David Rolfe has just done the first of his two presentations, which is a screening of his amazing movie, the update on the Turin Shroud story, which has been a good portion of filmmaker David's life. You know, the original one won him a BAFTA, got him international notoriety, and brought this important story to the attention of millions of people on every continent on Earth. This story is about to get a whole new momentum. Now, you know that on The Unexplained on the radio, we did an update with David, and indeed on television, we did an update with David about his current research and his current version of the film, his second version of the film, which is called Who Can He Be, which brings the story up to date and also issues the British Museum with a $1 million challenge. If they can definitively produce another Turin Shroud, because if it's a fake, then it's possible to do it again, because you know it's a fake. and the silence from them so far has been deafening. Now, we're in the coffee bar at the moment, and David was with me. We, you know, we introduced the movie to the audience, packed audience on board the MV Discovery. So, David, there's more to this. I mean, this is a gift that keeps on giving. You've given decades of your professional life to this. There's going to be further movement on this, isn't there, on this million-dollar challenge?
Yes, there has. I mean, we, the million-dollar challenge has been made to the British Museum. There has been a studied silence from them. They've just got a new chairman at the British Museum, and we're coming up. I managed to hold back a bit from my budget for this coming Easter, so that with a year gone since the British Museum were offered $1 million if they could replicate the Turin Shroud, I can go back after that year and say, come on guys, you know, are you so wealthy as a museum that something you said was a simple medieval forger, you don't want to take this $1 million that the backer of my film is offering you if you could just show how it was done?
Silly question, you're certain they're aware of this? I've asked you this before.
Oh, absolutely certain that I'm aware of it. I've written to the... I mean, not only is did the film come out with, and I'm delighted to say, mainly because it was Easter, it had full pages in The Guardian, The Times, The Telegraph. The British Museum would have to be absolutely blind not to know that this challenge had been made. And from them, a deafening silence. They don't want to go down there.
I don't know, just finally, whether you can talk about this, whether you want to, but you've had some new impetus and some new drive from the United States, haven't you?
I have. I'm pleased to say, whilst in the UK, the subject is out there streaming, in America, it's streaming extremely well, and I've just been invited to go to Washington in February, where they are going to issue their own million-dollar challenge.
Right, and that's going to put it back on the front pages again, get you on the American media. Back to the little cozy world here in the, I don't know which bit of the Atlantic we're in at the moment. I know we're heading for Sydney, Nova Scotia right now, and we've had another day at sea. You've had remarkable response, haven't you, from people who were in that packed theatre watching that movie? Those who perhaps had forgotten the story, those you've just reminded them of the story.
Well, certainly it was films. If you go to the cinema, it's very rare that you actually get applause at the end. Mm-hmm. It was very gratifying that the audience reacted in that way, and I would hope that quite a few more people will come to the interactive talk that I'm going to do when actually the full-sized replica of the Shroud, because it'll be possible for me to go into a bit more detail, answer questions, and I think that they'll get as much, if not more, out of that.
We saw you on this presentation, Who Can He Be? We saw clips of you as you were in 1978. It's a lifetime. You've given a lifetime to this. Are you feeling at this stage where this fresh million-dollar challenge will be issued, when it's going to get more impetus now, are you feeling that all of that work and all of that commitment and dedication has been worth it?
Well, actually, it has been a two-way street. Back in 1978, that first film won a BAFTA. And on the strength of that, I wrote to ITV and said, how about a job? And they gave me one. And I worked there very productively and enjoyably for over 10 years. And so my reward, if you like, was very real. That film launched my career in a way that would have otherwise taken me a much longer time to do.
How are you finding the coffee and cakes on board?
Well, I have to tell you, the cookies here at the coffee, whatever it is here, are absolutely wonderful. And I do really want to thank you and Marella for giving me... I mean, this subject could have laid up as obscure as the Shroud has for a long time. But thanks to you and Marella, we've had a good chance to spread the word amongst a large number of people.
We'll be having you back. David Rolfe, thank you. Okay, we continue on MV Marella Discovery and heading for Canada now, and I will report back to you, say in due course. Well, the Unexplained Live 2023 reaches October the 30th. I don't know what day, what number day that is, because we've had so many sessions to do and there's been such a lot going on that you run out of track of time really on board Morello Discovery. There have been presentations every day. Yesterday it was David Rolfe's film screening that left everybody, because they hadn't seen it and they weren't ready for what they were about to experience, left everybody spellbound. I'm getting people coming up to me this morning telling me how good they thought it was, and it was. So if you get the chance to check out either of David Rolfe's films, I recommend that you do. This man is a master filmmaker and such a nice man, and so understated, as you'll hear on the podcasts and interviews that I've done with him. So I'm not getting a lot of time off the ship, but I wanted to get off here just to see it for an hour. This is Sydney, Nova Scotia, and I asked a few people about it on board, and it's just a nice, ordinary Canadian community. And I likened it, when I was talking to my sister just before, to if a cruise ship pulled up in Crosby, in Liverpool, where I was born. It's just a nice place. Nice American-style, part wooden houses, right up to the dock here. I'm looking back at the ship, and a big Coast Guard vessel. And it's peaceful, and it's all on a human scale. It's rather like the scale of things that we'd forgotten, I think, because our lives in the UK are so fast now. And I think we forgot what life was meant to be about, but that's enough philosophy. So upcoming sessions, Malcolm Robinson talking about ghosts, David Whitehouse talking about exploring for alien life. All of the presentations have gone really well, and that's nice. So this is just a little moment in the middle of it all for me, just to check this place out. It's very, very cold. Not really ready for the drop in temperature. You know, we've seen it all on this voyage. From Florida, which was very warm, and Newport. Rather, Newport, what I'm talking about. Portland, Maine, that's better. Portland, Maine, that was sunny and quite warm, and everybody there, locals, were surprised. Now there's a bite in the air here, but it's a fresh bite and it's nice. So I'm looking out over the harbour, and as I say, what I can't get over about it is just the human scale of things and the ordinariness of it. And here in this coastal path, which is a park dedicated to the memory of people who fell at sea in wars, it's lovely. There are three ducks. Dark brown ducks, three dark brown ducks just lazily enjoying the grass. And that's basically it. I don't think there needs to be any more. Across the water, on the inlet here, is a little yacht harbour. And I'm going to go and do a little bit of exploring in a little old church that looks like the church that you saw in the titles, if you're old enough. Maybe you saw the repeats like I did. It looks like the church from Peyton Place on the TV years ago. But really nice. And this is Sydney, Nova Scotia, October the 30th, 2023. The Unexplained Live. Again, reporting for duty. Right, the Unexplained, little extra here. Just walked into a little shop in Sydney, Nova Scotia. This little shop is called North Atlantic Outerwear
Company.
And the voice you can hear there is the ebullient and irrepressible, and I've known her for 2 minutes, Paulette. But Paulette, I thought I could talk. Paulette can beat me. How are you, Paulette?
I am. If I was any better, I'd be travelling alongside you on the ship. How's that?
Now, with the gift of the talk like that, I think you've got, and I can detect slightly, a tiny bit of the Irish going on.
Just a tiny bit. I believe I'm half Irish and half Scottish, they tell me.
Right. I mean, were you born here? Did you travel here?
No,
what happened?
I was born here. I was born in a little town just outside of Sydney, Nova Scotia, called Glace Bay, Nova Scotia, Nouvelle Coste.
Okay. Yes. And every day you meet these people off these cruise ships, the Brits, all the rest of them. I'm guessing they're all different.
Let me say it this way. For starters, we are all the same. We just wear a different jacket or coat, if I may. just a cover. But yes, I've met the good, the bad, the ugly, the in-between, the wonderful, the not so wonderful, the rich, the poor, all the people that you can imagine all over this globe. I love them.
Anyone famous?
You.
What? I think we could probably put that down at the bottom of the Z list. But, I mean, or maybe the person who's made you laugh most or interested you most, or somebody who said, by the way, did you know I own, you know, half of the English Midlands?
Yes, I've had a few. One of the men that he owns a bar down in the British Isles. Oh, my goodness, I met him and his lovely wife. They were fabulous. I've met a few hockey players, met a few Canadians, believe it or not. I've met a lot of people, Hugh. A lot of people make me laugh, a lot of people make me cry. But, you know, I've met a lot.
That, my grandmother from Liverpool would be the first to tell you, is life. Now, I was just telling gentlemen here, I'm sorry, I'm...
And that is my wonderful, my wonderful co-worker, my boss's husband. His name is a good old Irish name. He's called Patrick.
Patrick.
Patrick Murphy.
Patrick, the two P's, Patrick and Paulette.
Yes.
I was actually telling, and my dad would be, if he was still with us, he would be thrilled I'm here in Canada, because my dad served in the Canadian Army.
That's amazing.
It was the back end. I mean, I'm old enough. He was very young when he served, but he was drafted into the Canadian Army because they were short of people for a while.
Yes.
So literally, I've got a picture of my dad with the maple leaf on his shoulder.
That's amazing.
And when he finished his military service, because he'd served Canada, and this is a true story, and it's not known much about in Britain, that he could have been let go from the army at the end of service in Canada. And he nearly did it, and I was nearly Canadian.
Well, bless
sadly, I wasn't, because he was the oldest kid in Liverpool.
Picture it.
He had to go home and look after his younger brothers and sisters, and he thought he couldn't just become a Canadian and do that. But I was very nearly Canadian. How about that?
Well, I don't know if I can imagine you Canadian,
didn't
but
I
if I close
out
my eyes for a second.
Well, no, I'd have to stop saying out. I'd have to start saying oot.
Or a bye. That's what we say up here, because we're on the A team up here in Canada, well, let me tell you.
Well, no, this is Cape Breton, right?
This is Sydney, Nova Scotia, which is upon Cape Breton Island, a rock in the sea, if I may add.
I keep hearing, when I listen online, the weather forecast for here.
Oh, gosh.
It gets stormy and cold up here, doesn't it?
Tumbleweeds. Tumbleweeds will be going through here in another week. Yes, literal tumbleweeds, if I may. And, you know, we have been very, very, very fortunate the last year to have all you wonderful people coming in off of these cruise ships, if I can add that. Today is your first run up here, and I've met, like, Andrea, the first one off of the boat. I mean, an absolute beautiful lady, a retired police officer. She's made my day come true here, because I want to follow after her, because women, in case the world doesn't know this, can do anything. And
do you know how I know that?
Oh, tell me, Hugh.
They told me. We've just done a high five there.
A high five, yes, we did.
And just walked in here, because he turns up everywhere I go. Now, this man is famous.
Oh!
Did you ever see the film about the Turin Shroud mystery, the famous one? This man made it. His name is David Rolfe.
Oh, my goodness, it's a pleasure. Not David Roth from...
David Rolfe.
Rolfe. R-O-L-E. Rolfe. I was thinking about David Roth from the Van Halen.
No, well, he does play a mean bit of guitar as well. Nice to see you, David. Have you been around Sydney, Nova Scotia?
I have. It's an absolutely delightful place.
There you are. You see, look, he says all the right things
it
as well.
It is.
Paulette, I'm going to let you, because you've got customers coming in here
you?
Now, and I've just bought a T-shirt, so I've started it all off for you.
Listen, I've been waiting for this to happen, okay? Because there's been over 300,000 people that have crossed this pavilion this year, and they've come into the North Atlantic Outerwear Company here in Sydney, Nova Scotia.
Would that be the North Atlantic Outerwear Company in Sydney, Nova Scotia?
That's right, you. And you know what? You can come in. If you can't get us here, you know what? You can always get us online. I mean, just look us up at the North Atlantic Outerwear. And I just feel very privileged and proud, because like I said, my children, my daughter and my son-in-law lived in Cardiff, Wales for almost 7 years. They played with the Cardiff Devils, if I may. Joey had that. It was fabulous, and this is a gift, Hugh, and I just want to say thank you for coming in and absolutely making my day, my life, and it's been a pleasure to meet you and all of the people so far that we've met.
Well, hey, I don't think I can say any more, really. I'm not going to name the company again, because... Even though people will hear this on a podcast and there are no rules, I think we probably just broke it. You've definitely got a plug. If you're passing this way, you know the name of the place, and you know, we're having a good time here. And I'm going to go and buy my T-shirt, and then I'm going to go and have a coffee.
And some Baileys, maybe.
Well, yes, that would be jolly nice. Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome, darling.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Unexplained Live. We continue. The Unexplained, bit of a wind blowing across from the inlet here. This is Halifax, Nova Scotia. Bright day. The CBC radio weather forecast for tonight, 7 degrees during the day, down to minus one or so, and possibly snow coming in. Okay, we haven't had snow in the UK yet. Storms from what I'm reading, but interesting. Walking along the waterfront area here, which is a little bit like the old Liverpool pierhead, to be honest. A lot of new building. Halifax, as I heard, I won't see much of it, but from what I can see from here, it's a proud modern city with a lot of proud modern buildings here. And just walking along here, I met Peter from the cruise, who's been part of the sessions and has been one of the many people who didn't specifically book for The Unexplained, who've discovered the sessions on, come along to one, and then discovered I like this and done all of them. Peter, thank you very much for your feedback about it, and I'm really thrilled that you've been enjoying it.
You're very welcome. We was pleased that we spotted it. We've attended and have tended everyone now. We've met people around the ship that we've said, "Oh, have you been to the lecture?" and spread the word. And they were surprised and some disappointed that they've missed it as well.
Right, yeah, because a lot of these things happen, you know, as much as you should look at the newspaper every day. A lot of it happens on board, I've discovered. By word of mouth, you start one thing at the front of the ship and it ends up at the back of the ship, you know, within the day. So I'm glad that the feedback is good. Of the ones that you've seen, we've had David Whitehouse and Malcolm Robinson and Liz Cormell and David Rolfe about the Shroud of Turin. Can you pick out any favourites?
No. Very open-minded, because through life we've experienced odd things ourselves.
Oh, like what?
My sister in her house with young children. I've stayed there, put keys down, got up the following morning, no keys. 20 minutes of searching, keys were then back on the windowsill.
And this isn't the kids?
No, but it's always been the kids. Well, young babies. Mm. We've had, or she's had balloons vanish when they've been blown up, clothing. And we wondered if it was the house. Later on we moved, or she moved to a new house, self-built, and there was a number of issues in that that had followed her.
So it's almost like a poltergeist thing then, do you think?
As I say, very, very open mind.
But obviously something having fun. It's not anything that's like, you know, malevolent.
No, there was nothing at all from anybody being attacked or injured from that aspect. And although she's very reluctant, Christmas time, sister and the wife Lynn home.
Lynn doesn't want to speak, by the way, just in case. Lynn is the strong silent type.
And she came into the living room where we were. Very angry. What have you been doing? On the kitchen table there was coffee, cornflakes, and a total mess. Nobody had left the room where we were. So again, very
no cat.
No.
Well, that's inexplicably unexplained, isn't it, really? Yeah. There's no other way of putting it. Well, look, I'm really pleased that you're enjoying all of this. You know, Malcolm Robinson is this afternoon as we record this.
Can't wait.
He's going to be talking about ghostly photographs, and then tomorrow it's David Whitehouse, Alien Life in Space, and then hopefully Andrea Perrin herself after we've shown the Conjuring movie Halloween Night, which is tonight. I'm going to let you get on, but thank you very much.
No, thank you for your time, and thank the others as well.
And although you weren't keen on talking, Lynn, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Halifax, Nova Scotia, still the same nice sunny day here. I've been discovering more about it. It's a very classy city. It's clean. It's friendly. It is quintessentially Canadian. And I'm in a shop at the moment, which is a kind of tartan and craft shop. But the person who's with me now will tell you the title properly. Sorry, what's this place called?
Northern Waters Knitwear and Tartan Shop.
And you've actually got things like, I've never seen a leather kilt in my life.
It's a leather utility kilt, direct from Scotland.
A utility, okay, all right. So it's come all the way over here. A utility kilt.
Yes.
Wow, Z. Okay, what's your name?
Crystal.
Crystal, I haven't seen much of Halifax. What I've seen along the waterfront and the little places I've walked, I've been impressed with it. So clean, and people, if you say hello to them or you ask them for help, they will say hello and they will help you.
We are known for our friendliness here.
So what if you were selling me Halifax as a place, right? What's the greatest thing about living here?
Poutine.
I saw a poster for the greatest poutine.
Yes.
Now, I think I know what poutine is because I spent my life listening to Radio Canada International. But explain for my listener here who probably has never heard of poutine what it is and why it's so important to Canadians.
It's, well, us Canadians, we like fatty stuff. So it's French fries, and it's topped with cheese curds and gravy.
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 All right. But there's I've just seen a little like booth selling that stuff, the best poutine, it says.
Yes.
So you actually buy something like that in a carton and carry that around with you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We will do that. We'll make it at home ourselves, too.
What's the greatest thing about being Canadian? Canadians have a reputation for being nice people. I've never met a Canadian that I did not like, including now. But, you know, what's the greatest thing about being Canadian for you?
I do believe it's our friendliness. I was born and raised in Halifax, and I would never move anywhere else.
I was listening to, I shouldn't overhear conversations, but I was listening to a guy talking to his friend walking along the waterfront 5 minutes ago. And he was saying that he went to live in Quebec for a while and didn't like it and was pleased to come back to Halifax because it's a nice place. So why is it such a, because he thinks so, why is it such a nice place?
I think we were just born and raised to be friendly. I've lived here my whole life. I wouldn't move anywhere else because of the friendly people. And people will always help you if they can.
Now, I do a podcast and radio show called The Unexplained, which is kind of about science and space and ghosts and all sorts of cool stuff. A lot of Canadians that I've spoken to over the years have had experiences of strange things. Have you ever had anything?
I have not personally, no, but I know of others who have.
Okay. And can you think of any of those stories?
I remember growing up as a child, there was a lady that had seen the ghost of her dead father at the top of her stairs.
Oh, boy. See, it's everywhere, isn't it?
Well,
listen, I think you deserve a second plug for that. So the name of the store is, and it's right on the harbor front here on the waterfront by the pier for Pier 22 for the ships.
It is. We are called Northern Waters Knitwear and Tartan Shop. We have three locations, two here in Halifax, and our flagship store is in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island.
Oh, P.E., I'd love to go there one day. I want to come back to Halifax. I want to go everywhere. Thank you so much for helping me. It was very kind of you.
You're very welcome.
Have a lovely day.
You too. Thank you.
The Unexplained, we continue. So The Unexplained, we're in the Squid, which is an entertainment lounge here, a big one on the ship where a lot of the presentations have been given. And we're about to hear Dr. David Whitehouse and his third presentation in 5 minutes from now. We're in the glide path to it. We've heard about the story of Apollo. We've heard about Mars, the moon and beyond. This time round, David is going to treat the audience to his presentation about the search, the quest for alien life, which is ongoing. NASA and a whole group of organizations now firmly focused on this objective to discovering whether there is anything out there. And we're discovering ourselves new things all the time. Malcolm Robinson, haven't spoken with him so far, has given a couple of presentations here. Malcolm, it's been good, hasn't it? You've done the ghosts and you've also done the UFOs. It's worked.
It's been fantastic. It's been a great experience to have an opportunity to speak on this cruise ship in regards to the ghostly phenomena that's been happening all over Great Britain and the UFO sightings as well. So great opportunity, yeah.
And some of those photographs that you've got, some of them are celebrated photographs, like the taxi cab with an apparition in the back from 1960, but some of them I've never seen before, some of them quite recent. One from Covent Garden, an apparent person floating in space. These images are remarkable, but they're rare, aren't they?
Mostly they are rare. I mean, the photographs that I showed yesterday gives an opportunity for people who are not well versed in the subject to really have a good hard look at these photographs and make up their own mind, because there's some stunning photographs of ghostly phenomena out there, yeah?
Well, I think they've been terrific presentations from all of the speakers here. And the fact is, you can't see this, I'm talking to you, my listener, but we've got an absolutely packed audience here for David's third presentation. So we're going to get on and do that. And, you know, here we are aboard the MV Discovery. We're heading towards Boston now. And for me, that's the point where I get off and fly back to London to do the unexplained on Sunday. There's quite a bit of chop on the sea, but the great thing about the ship is the stabilization system, which was explained by the captain to us on the last one, how that works, actually cancels most of it out, which I think is a little engineering miracle for all of us here, because if you look out, the sea is pretty choppy, a bit variable. This morning we woke up to snow and sleet and some pretty cold conditions. Right now, a bit of a chop out there, but you don't know any of that in here. Let's get on with it then. The Unexplained continues. The Unexplained on board the MV Discovery. For me, 11 days of events come to an end here on a sunny, crystal blue sky Boston day. And as we say in the UK, I am gutted that I haven't been able to get a chance to see Boston this time, so I'm going to have to come back and make time to do it peacefully. I once experienced Boston at Christmas. It is fab. So it's nice to know the old place is still here. And I am joined at the peak of the pyramid, really, of our events here, by Andrea Perrin, who you will know from the show from The Conjuring House and all the other stuff in the books, House of Darkness, House of Light. There are three of those, aren't there? Are they? See, I know these things. I remember she's nodding at me. And also, Jacqueline, is it Nunes or Nunes?
Nunez.
Nunez. Yeah. Jacqueline Nunez, who owns the house now. Yeah. So two people here. 10th anniversary, first of all, Andrea, of the movie, which was on Halloween, appropriately enough. How's that been marked here in the US?
Well, actually, the 10th anniversary was July 19th.
Okay.
And we did a splendid event at the house with the screening of the film. And, you know, it's a really amazing. I've never seen another horror film in my entire life other than The Conjuring, because I had to. And yet, every time I watch it, I see something else in it, a little detail, a little tweak, a little. It's really a masterfully made film, even though only about 5% of it is absolutely accurate. The rest of it was conjured in the minds of two creative screenwriters who desperately wanted to tell elements of the true story. Everyone associated with the film read my books, and the suits at Warner Brothers said, no, take it out, every time they put parts of the story that were true into the screenplay, because they were afraid people would run screaming out of the theater.
Right, so the actual real-life account, which is unusual in fiction, is that the real life account is scarier than the movie?
It's scarier, it's more intense, but it's also, I think it's more spiritual. I don't think of our story as a horror story. Hollyweird does, but I don't. I think of it as a love story with a wicked supernatural twist. You know, we learned everything that we ever needed to know about life and death and the afterlife by living in that house for 10 years.
It was the hard way, though.
Yeah. Well, yes, the hard way. I would agree with that. But I'll tell you, that house is just as active as it ever was when we lived there. And now, because I have grown so close with the new owner, Jacqueline Nunez, who is here with me for this event, which I'm so delighted. I mean, she can tell you things that would curl your hair. And honestly, but the house is not, there's nothing evil there. You know, we had some bad experiences when we lived there, but in retrospect, you know, as I reflect back 50 years ago, I think they were more than anything just trying to get our attention, trying to communicate with us. And I know that sounds bizarre, but I really do believe that they loved us. I really do believe that. And yes, we had a couple of cranky spirits, but you know what, Howard? I love them too. I love them because they exist. Yeah, I don't care who they were in real life, that they still are in afterlife is a miracle to me.
And you say they loved us, but in the movie, and you know, we're not talking about the book here, but we're talking the movie we screened here on the ship the other night.
Yeah.
And, you know, people stayed up very late to watch this on Halloween, which was just perfect. But, for example, your sister at one point wakes up to find this thing with fangs, apparently, and possible blood dripping from its face, looking down at her. And you're saying they loved you.
But that wasn't one of the spirits.
Okay.
My sisters had been playing with a Ouija board and trying to conjure up something, and they invited something into the house. And they were told not to, and they did it anyway. And it stayed long enough to make its presence known, and then it was gone. It was a warning to them.
Right. Yeah. Not to mess
not
with this,
mess
because
with
there's an aspect of this that's out of control.
That's right. And when it disappeared, it turned from that vision into like shadows of crows flying all over the room, and then it was just gone. And that only happened for about, I would say, 15 to 30 seconds.
And what about the birds flying into windows and breaking them? That was part of the movie.
It was, but again, conjured in the minds of two creative screenwriters. The issue that we had was with bats coming down the chimney in the parlor and escaping into the house. And actually, I love bats, and I felt terrible, but all of us had tennis rackets and badminton rackets, and my father would run and get the rackets and throw them at us and say, get them. Well, I hit one into my sister's hair.
Oh, no.
And to this day, Christine will not forgive me for body slamming a bat into her hair. I will never be forgiven.
But, most women I've known in my life have been terrified of bats, and they always say, they'll get in your hair.
Yeah, oh, well, and it did. And yeah, that didn't go over well. I didn't want to kill them. In fact, I just opened the door to the front porch and tried to usher them out, but they would come. It was almost like they were playing follow the leader. One would come down, and then there'd be five or six right behind them.
Holy moly. And yeah. The culmination of the film, and again, I know that's not the way it really happened. The culmination of the film is an exorcism.
Yes.
An exorcism that purges a terrible spirit. Well, seemingly purges a terrible spirit, and is done as a sort of do-it-yourself exorcism because of the absence of a priest to do it.
Right.
It is a terrifying scene. It's in the final minutes of the movie, so they've got to grip you there, because they ain't going to grip you if they don't do it then. Are you saying that none of that happened, or some of that happened, or it happened in a different way?
Howard, I am telling you, and we are sitting face to face, look in my eyes, I am telling you that what happened, what really happened, puts that scene to shame. I don't know how they could actually even recreate
what really happened.
The Warrens showed up, and they had an entourage with them. They had a priest. They had a medium named Mary Pastorella. They had a film crew. They had an audio specialist. And my father was livid. He did not want them in the house. And Mrs. Warren, thankfully she was a woman, because, my father was so angry about this. She looked at my mother and she said, Roger, if you love your wife, you'll let us do this. Well, Ed had to pull him out of the room. He was so angry. He didn't want any part of it. He thought that it was a dangerous thing to do, and he was right. He was right. And when my mother, Mary Pastorella, started, that's where the name of the film came from, because she started conjuring the spirits and throwing open wide the doors to the netherworld during a seance that went so terribly wrong that my mother almost paid with her life. It was awful. The table was at least a 200-pound table, was levitated off the floor, and then it slammed back down. All the candles, all the lights, everything went out like a supernatural wind came through the room. And then my mother was levitated in the chair that she was in, and in a split second, she was thrown from the middle of our dining room into the middle of our parlor, and everybody that was present in that house heard her skull strike that floor, and we didn't know if she was dead or alive. It was the most traumatizing, most upsetting event of my entire life.
And what is it that exerts that kind of force,
evil,
do you think?
Evil. And I've never seen a demon. I don't know if demons exist. I've never met an angel. I don't know if angels exist. What I do know is that we live in duality, and we live in a realm where good and evil are at opposing forces all the time. It is constant conflict, and pure, unadulterated evil does exist in this world. And whatever she called in, and I consider it spiritual malpractice. Four of the five children were present in the house when this happened, and we saw our mother nearly die. She was unconscious for an hour. And the last thing that happened was Ed Warren tried to stop my father from going to her side. And he turned around and punched him in the face and took a man twice his size to his knees. And then he went to my mother and he threw everyone in the house out. And the people, the cinematographers that had set up their state-of-the-art huge cameras down in the cellar, Lorraine told them to go get their equipment and get out of the house. Mm. And when they went down the cellar stairs, their cameras had been bashed into a billion pieces all over the floor.
Does that mean they didn't get any footage? Because a few people have asked me about that.
No footage of it, no audio, no video, nothing.
So you're saying that what was in the house was basically on your side and just wanting to introduce itself to you. And what happened was when the Warrens arrived, Ed and Lorraine Warren, the most famous paranormal investigators of their time, and when people started messing with it, they opened the door to something else. But the something else was not really connected with what was already there and was coexisting with you.
It is not there now. It's absolutely not.
And why is it not there now?
Because we made peace with the spirits. Well, first of all, it was only there to make its presence known. And then it left. And it was there to make its presence known, not to us, but to Ed and Lorraine Warren. And Mrs. Warren, I saw her 40 years again. After that night, I saw her 40 years later. And the first thing she said to me after she embraced me was, we made mistakes. We were in over our heads the moment we crossed the threshold to your farmhouse, and we just didn't know it. She owned it. She did. Ed said on his deathbed, Lorraine, while you are still among the living, you make sure you tell the Perrin family story. He always described it as, in his words, the most intense, most compelling, most disturbing, and most significant investigation they ever conducted over more than 40 years as paranormal investigators.
And what conclusion did they come, when they wrote it up, did they come to?
Well, in their files, she blamed Bathsheba Sherman for everything, and Bathsheba Sherman never even lived at that farm. I'm sure there were only a few homesteads at that time, and everybody knew each other, but, you know, she walked in the house the first time. We had no idea who they were at all. The film makes it look like my mother sought their help, but she let them in because it was a cold night. It was the night before Halloween in 1973, and later in the evening when Mrs. Warren had identified a spirit that she said was a malicious or malignant spirit in the house named Bathsheba. You know, my mom's like, well, Bathsheba didn't live here. She lived at the Sherman farm
just
about a mile
for my listener
away.
And those who haven't heard you before, mm-hmm. Who was Bathsheba?
Well, she was considered the villain in the film, but she didn't, I mean, she copped all the blame for everything, and it wasn't her. The spirit that was haunting and taunting my mother was long dead before Bathsheba Sherman was even born, and we have yet to identify who that was. But I think in time we will, because now the spirits are much more forthcoming. And that's a whole nother story in its own right. But, you know, suffice to say, we have learned so much about the history in the 50 years that this story has been part of our lives. It's phenomenal. It's like a never-ending story, and it will continue long after we are gone.
Your dear mom is depicted in the movie as somebody desperate to get help for her family, hugely, like any good mom, protective of her family.
And she was, but she didn't seek out the Warrens. It was actually a young group of investigators that inexplicably showed up at our house in August of 1973. And they had experiences on the property that were so compelling that they sought out the Warrens and told them about our family. And that's when they showed up. And Mrs. Warren said to my mother, we waited to come until we thought the veil would be thinnest, and that would be at Halloween. And my mother just looked at her and she said, then every day is Halloween at this farm. Every day there's no veil here. There is no veil here. We never knew what was going to happen next.
And your mum, how did she come through it? Because again, the movie depicts her as somebody who pretty early on in all of this is on tranquilizers, is fighting to cope with it, but also struggling to protect you all. Mm-hmm. How did she come through it at the end of the day? And how did your parents' relationship survive that? Not well, I don't think.
It didn't. I mean, they stayed together for the 10 years that we lived there, but it began to break down when my father failed to believe her. He questioned her veracity, and he knew she wasn't lying. He was just so afraid that he had moved his family into an environment that he had zero control over. So the best thing for him to do, at least for the first couple of years, was just deny that it was happening, that you know, it must be something else. There's some other plausible explanation, yada, yada. And one day I remember he and my mother were mixing it up in the kitchen, and she just looked at him and she said, "Roger, your belief in the spirits, the existence of the spirits is not contingent upon your belief in them." And I was actually so inspired by what she said, I ran to my journal and I wrote it down, and it became part of the books as I, you know, created the trilogy, House of Darkness, House of Light, which is actually, it's not a history book, it's a family memoir. And actually, we've learned so much since Jacqueline took over the house and has brought people in that are able to really communicate with the spirits that we have... you know, I'm going to have to go into the book and make some changes. It's the only right thing to do.
Because it's an ongoing story.
It's an ongoing story. And more, it's like an onion. You peel back a layer, there's another layer. And Jacqueline has in so many ways brought it to life. She has brought an energy to that place and released them to be able to communicate with us in a much more open way. And, you know,
we're getting some mouthed messages here between Jacqueline.
No,
we're going to talk with Jacqueline in just a second about this to bring it up to date.
I'll let her decide what she's willing to share.
That's fine. You know, as much as you can is fine, and we're not going to go further than you want to. We never do on this show, as
and
they
that's
say.
That's true of you. But very responsible in your reporting. You have a marvelous show, a huge presence, not just in the UK, but internationally. And I really admire you, and I'm so, so happy to finally meet you in person.
I never thought we would, but here we are on this ship in Boston under the beautiful American blue sky. And look, House of Darkness, House of Light. The message here is the opposite, the yin and the yang of the thing. Yeah. The awful
everything
experiences.
Is one thing.
Yes.
Everything is one thing. It is energy. It is consciousness. It is existence.
But you've gained from this. You've told me this before.
Yes.
It's something that's delivered you almost a gift in your life.
I agree.
A lot of people won't understand that.
I know. People don't understand it. Some people don't. But my mother is in hospice now, and we're losing her slowly.
I'm sorry.
And thank you. And she said to me not long before I left for this trip, she said, "You know, I'm not afraid to die." Mm-hmm. She said, that I learned everything I need to know about life and death in the afterlife living at that farm. And you know what? She never went back to the house after we left. But I've got a feeling once she leaves us, that's her first stop.
Boy, I mean, this is a life of experience. It's 50 years now. And you're marking it. I know that you haven't done, you know, events to mark it or even interviews to mark it in the UK.
No.
You have in America. So I'm really pleased that you can do this with me here now.
I am too.
And thank you for sharing. Jacqueline Nunez, you own the place now?
I do. I bought it in May of 2022. Yes, I bought it in May of 2022.
And look, I come from news desk background, right? So I'm going to ask this question. What do you pay for a house like that?
Well, it was.
It was a lot. Yes, it was. It's all public knowledge. I paid $1.5 million.
Why did you buy it?
It's a funny thing. It was a random Saturday morning, and I'm scrolling through my news feed, and I see that the Conjuring House is for sale. And I knew immediately that I wanted to own the house. So I went and looked at it a couple days later.
went on a tour there and had it under agreement, I think, by the next day. So why did I buy it? I came to the Conjuring House from a very spiritual side. I'm a practicing spiritualist, right? I'm not in the paranormal. I wasn't in the paranormal until I bought the Conjuring House.
What, for just for those who don't know or aren't aware of the gradations of the thing, what's the difference between, you know, somebody who gets off on spooks and somebody who's a practicing spiritualist?
Well, really, the only difference is semantics. It's all the same thing. It's all energy. It's all activity. It's all engaging with the continuity of consciousness. And that's what interested me in buying it, that this property enables us to really have very intense and personal interaction with consciousness that has survived death. And it is that question of the continuity of consciousness that really interests me, that we're able to do there.
Whose consciousness?
The souls of the people that have passed.
In that location, or they've come to that location? I know that sounds like a dumb question, but...
Well, yeah. It's actually, we have a lot of spirits there that we consider more permanent residents, but we've also been described as like the Grand Central Station of the spirit world.
Wow.
We have spirits that come and go. They might come with guests. They might, you know, come and go just because we are this like beacon of a portal,
if you
will.
I was going to ask you, yeah. So what draws them? And you think it's because they feel this is a good place to be?
For some reason, there are factors at the Conjuring House that make communication easier to occur, and we don't know why. We don't know what it is, if it's a physical thing, like an electromagnetic thing, or because of the water, or because of embedded history there. But something there enables an easier interaction of the dead with the living.
Are you hoping to achieve any one thing there? Are you hoping to have a great convocation of all of these spirits? Are you hoping to get them to have a big gathering and make a noise and show people?
Well, I mean, they do that all the time.
All right. Well, okay. Well, which very neatly, because you and Andrea are about to do your session here on stage, so I'm being very cheeky in doing this before we actually go on stage and do the session. You know, what sorts of things manifest themselves? If I was to go there,
yes.
Right, and I've seen one ghost in my life that appeared and disappeared in front of me. I'm certain that it was a ghost. But I want to have we call it in the UK the full Monty experience,
yes.
You know, the whole thing. I want the full nine yards here. What will I get?
It would depend on any given night. You might get footsteps. You might get doors opening and closing. You might capture voices on spirit devices. You might get mediums talking to spirits. It would vary depending on the night and depending on the energy that you bring. We really believe that the energy that you bring gets amplified there. And so it gets amplified as it interacts with you. So
what sorts of things have presented themselves?
Yes.
Yeah.
Disembodied voices. Several disembodied voices. Again, footsteps, methods of communication where we're actually able to have conversations, where words and stuff are spelled out for us so that we can have conversations.
Just simple yes, no, or more than that?
No, like spelling out words. So, in various ways
and
that we have.
And giving them birth and death dates.
Yes, yes, and verifying, right?
Well, like giving people who attend, Andrea's just said giving birth and death dates. Well, does that mean people from history or people who are attending? Would they tell me when I'm going to die?
No, nothing like that.
Thank God for that.
We wouldn't allow that. More if the spirit comes through, they will give us information that I'm able to confirm on Ancestry.com in lifetime,
right,
that their name was John Arnold and was born in 1773 and died in 1837, or whatever it might be.
Do they tell you about where they, crucially, do they tell you about where they are, what it's like?
Yes, they do, and they all describe it as the good place.
The good place.
The good place.
Do they give you any further indication, or are they not allowed to?
They're not really allowed to, that it's beautiful and peaceful and that they come and go.
Boy. And what would you like to achieve there? I kind of asked you that question before, but let's just kind of nail it on the head here.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is a plan unfolding. The thing about the energy of the Conjuring House, it is intelligent and it is purposeful. So there are messages that they're preparing all of us to disclose and deliver at a wider level. So we're being prepared for disclosure
that's
of
interesting.
Things.
All right, we're being prepared for it. I believe that there are huge changes in train at the moment because mankind, humanity, and you know, I don't care what anybody thinks when I say this, we can't go on like this. You know, we're heading to a path of doom, I think. You know, and I'm not trying to be a merchant of that, but I just think, you know, we're destroying everything around us. So something has to stop it. And you think that the Conjuring House might have a part in that?
I do. I think that there are a lot of energy centers around the world that are being activated right now to help humanity and to help us heal and to help us grow. It's not just the Conjuring House. Like I said, I think centers are being activated all around the world.
Well, to be continued, as they say. Thank you for doing this when we're counting down the minutes to you both going on stage with me. I think we'll repeat some of this material, but I think that's absolutely cool and fine. And to hear from you, Jacqueline, that there is a broader, bigger purpose to this, that's very good news for me, which means I want to visit and I want to be part of that, because I think there is a momentum. They're playing with the sound check here, so they're probably going to drown me out any second now. So, Andrea, listen, thank you. I didn't thank you at the beginning of this, and I should have. I just launched straight into it. You know, old news guy. Thank you very much for making time for me, for doing this. It's taken us a good 6 months to actually make this happen. Yes. And I can't tell you how pleased I am to look into your eyes and get the story from the person.
Now, Howard, I have always described that farmhouse as a portal cleverly disguised as a farmhouse. And that is bearing fruit now. It is. And I encourage anyone and everyone around this planet with an earshot of this to find a way to get into that house. It will change the way you think about everything forever.
Do you think there are other places, perhaps in my country, that are similar, or is this place absolutely 100% unique?
I would say that this house is probably one of the most famous or infamous haunted houses. Should be just famous, because there's nothing negative about it as far as I'm concerned. But yes, there are many places. I agree with Jacqueline about this. There are portals opening all around the world right now so that they can teach us how to love each other powerfully and how to live in peace. And they know best. We need to listen to them.
I'm not going to ask you any more, because we're going to run out of things to say on stage otherwise. Andrea Perrin, thank you very, very much.
You're welcome, sweetheart.
Jacqueline Nunes, more power to your spiritual elbow, as we say.
Thank you very much.
The Unexplained continues. Listen, we're at the back end of it now. My plan, once we've done this stage session, I have to run to my cabin on this ship, collect my bags, head to an airport hotel, and then in a matter of 12 hours or so, I've got to be flying back to the United Kingdom. And back to London, back to life, back to reality. It's been a hell of a week. My thanks very much indeed to Andrea, Jacqueline, to David Rolfe, the Turin Shroud filmmaker, who's actually sitting behind us here, to David Whitehouse, former BBC Space and Science editor and author, Liz Cormell, and Malcolm Robinson for his remarkable presentations about UFOs and about ghosts as well, and ghostly photographs, which have held the people on this ship spellbound this week. And we've got quite a good audience building up at the moment. But bearing in mind that we're in Boston and a lot of people have decided to get off and go and explore Boston, so they're going to video the presentation that we're about to do to show it on the ship again. But even so, some people have made the time to come here now and hear Andrea. I'm going to stop talking, which is unusual for me, and get myself prepared for what is to come. But my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online. On board for the last time, the Morella Discovery. Until next we meet. Please stay safe. Please stay calm. And above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.